Hello and welcome to The Other Marthas, the show where a drama student and a film graduate try to make sense of things we wish we were qualified in instead. A quick disclaimer before we get started, we do not claim to be experts in any of the fields we'll be discussing, so while everything we say will be based on individual research, it's just a bit of fun and we suggest that you take everything we say with a pinch of salt. I'm Martha, I'm the drama student.
And I'm the other Martha, the film graduate.
And Martha, we're doing things a bit differently today, aren't we?
Yes, we are. I'm telling you about a mountain mystery.
The secret of how this podcast works is that we're recording this after the fact, because as it turns out, we got so into discussing Martha's mountain mystery that we decided to just save mine until next week.
First of all, I want to say I researched this while I was home alone. And I frightened myself, and I then like roamed my house. Before I'd open every door, I'd be like, there might be someone here who's going to kill me, and I won't be surprised if there is, and I'll just open the door and punch them. Like, I was ready.
That's really cool. I love how as well it's like I know a bit about this case that you're going to cover, and it's nothing to do with like people getting into houses or anything like that. It's completely but somehow you still managed to get freaked by it, which I think is quite sweet.
I got freaked out and I was writing my little notes and I kept glancing over my shoulder. I was only leaving my desk to attend to my dog, who Ned is here with us again this episode.
He is. Do you want to tell them the precise situation of his being here?
I will, but please don't think I'm being nasty to him because he's really happy. I don't want people to think like, oh, it's abuse, take this dog away. Like,
I don't think anyone will.
So I've got him, I call it a trug, but also
yes,
a bucket.
I also would call it a trug, what you have there.
Those massive rubber buckets.
Yeah, flexible for carrying things.
And I've filled it with cushions and then I've placed him atop the cushion so he can like peek out, but he's currently asleep and loving it.
He looks some of the happiest I've ever seen him.
He loves his bucket. When I would attend to my dog, it reminded me of something that I consciously never say to him. When I let my dog in to my house, I never say, come in. I always say, come on. And the reason I do that is in case he's been replaced by a shape-shifting vampire.
When you said it, I got really like chilled, but I knew that was what you were gonna say, and that's stupid.
So, you know, that's my thing that I do for my dog. On to the actual thing that I'm talking about. Let me just have a sip of my water.
I think. Is that what you're doing, the Dyatlov Pass?
I am doing the Dyatlov Pass mystery.
Yeah.
The Dyatlov hiking party was made up of students and recent graduates from the Yuri Polytechnical Institute. And also one older hiker who was like trying to become a ski instructor.
One question. Where are these? Where are we? Where is the Dyatlov Pass? Where are these people?
We are in Russia.
Ooh.
They're in the wilds of Russia, having a great time.
And they're Russian?
Yes.
Cool.
In 1959, which, bit of history, Cold War. Ooh. What a party. Space race. All of that's going on. So there were 8 men and 2 women. They were all extremely experienced hikers and they were being led by Igor Dyatlov. Some fun facts about some of the party. Mm-hmm. Yuri Doroshenko, on a previous trip, had stood up to a bear with a geologist's hammer.
Oh my god. Yeah, so again, that's one of these things like panicking snakehead. That's the kind of thing I could see myself doing. Like, if we were stupid, like, I wouldn't do well. But if we're like, oh no, there's a bear, let's lay low. And I'd be like, oh, you have a hammer, don't you? Give it to me. And then I'd realise I'd royally screwed up.
There are some bears, because I don't live in a place where bears are, I don't know all of the rules about bears. But there's like one kind of bear that if you like are bigger and roar at them, they run away. And then there's one where you play dead. Like, there's variants.
Yeah.
Another one of the hikers, Lyuda Dubinina, I'm also not Russian, so I can't pronounce anything, was once shot in the leg on a hike and had to walk back to camp.
So these are like seasoned adventure hikers.
Not only are they like seasoned, but they're like tough.
Yeah.
Like, there are people who've been on hikes and never fought a bear with a hammer or been shot in the leg.
And these people decided to go on another hike after this.
So they picked a really difficult route because they were trying to reach level 3 of hiking, which is the highest level you could reach in the Soviet Union at the time. So they're also doing it for a qualification. It's the most intense D of E you've ever done.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I think our D of E went worse than theirs, but we survived.
We've lived to tell the tale, so.
Along their way, they stopped at this logging village. And when they reached there, it was like their last checkpoint. And Yuri Yudin, who was one of their party, turned back because he had joint pain.
Oh, yeah.
Couldn't do it. Dyatlov organized with his sports club, I guess that they were like doing the qualification through. Mm-hmm. He would send them a telegram on the 12th of February once they completed their hike.
Mm-hmm. Do you know what date they set out on?
I know they set out in late January.
Oh, okay.
The telegram never arrived. So a couple of days after the telegram didn't arrive, mm-hmm. everyone's like, oh, like initially they were like, well, you know, it takes
time. Takes a little bit longer, yeah.
To hike through snow and mountains.
Yeah.
Give them time. But then volunteers from their university set out to
Oh, these find were uni them. People.
So their lecturers and fellow students volunteered to find them. Which, like, I wish I had that sort of commitment from my university, because that would not have happened.
Yeah. Russian university communities in the 60s, apparently, we stan.
Well, they were, like, communists, so...
Yeah, good point. Every man for every man.
Later, they were joined by the police and the army. So finally, on the 26th of February, their camp was found. Took their time to find them, but, you know.
Yeah, like 2 weeks odd.
The tent was partially collapsed and mm-hmm. snow had settled on it. And the hikers' boots and possessions were still inside the tent.
Mm.
At this point, I changed pens. Well, I changed ink from, I think it's called Space Grey. I changed to... some black ink that's literally called Mystery Black.
Oh, what? Could not be more perfect.
My bucket dog has woken up.
Hello, bucket dog.
The tent seemed to have been slashed, reportedly cut from the inside.
Oh.
Like, the more I think about it, the more I hate it. They hiked through a snowstorm on the 2nd of February, and they were kind of thrown off course by the snow, and ended up camping on what the local tribespeople call in their language Dead Mountain.
Oh.
But it's called that because nothing grows there and there's no prey.
Right.
But obviously, like, it's Dead Mountain. That's terrifying.
Yeah.
There were footprints leading away from the tent. They looked like they were in a hurry. The footprints suggested that none of the hikers was wearing a full pair of shoes. Only
this
one
was
shoe.
Like deep snow, wasn't it?
This is like February in Russia.
Yeah.
Deep snow. Like
it's frostbite in minutes, deep snow.
Yeah, it's not like, you know how because when I first heard of this, I was like, oh, they were camping and they ran out of their tent. Like, you know,
expedition style of camping as opposed to like D of E.
My thought of camping is like you go camping in the summer and if you ran out of your tent without shoes or boots on, you're fine. Yeah. No. It's not a good time. You wouldn't do it, especially not if you knew what you were doing. Two bodies were found around 1 mile from the camp at the tree line. I was thinking about this the other day. In their diaries, they wrote that their average speed was 1 mile an hour, which means that these two people 1 mile from the camp would have been traveling for an hour without boots or proper clothing.
Jesus.
In deep snow.
Yeah.
So there's that.
Yeah.
They were lying by a campfire. Mm-hmm. They had burns on their hands and their feet.
Ooh.
Which is like so sad that they were basically burning their...
To try and get feeling back into them, presumably.
There was also a tree with all of the branches knocked down and the branches were lying underneath one of the bodies, suggesting that he'd climbed either to get a vantage point, having lost the others, or to look for the camp, or to gather firewood is another thought. From the post-mortem, they were both declared to have died from hypothermia, which, I mean, because they were out in the wilderness in a state of undress.
But then it's like these guys made them, they would be very, very aware of the danger of that. So what was so terrifying that they were like, we'll take our chances barefoot down this hill.
Yeah, well, these guys were also found only wearing their underwear.
Jeez.
There's a theory that's been postulated here, which is that they might have had paradoxical undressing, which is where when you have hypothermia, your body feels like it's burning.
Really hot. Yeah.
So they undress to cool down and then you die because you have hypothermia and now you're naked.
Yeah. Oh God. But then they have burns on their feet, so they clearly not necessarily at the same time, but knew that it was hypothermia and they were cold and they needed to warm up.
Three more bodies were found along the path from the camp to the tree line where the other bodies were found with their campfire. One of them had a fractured skull and they were all also partially clothed and they seemed to be positioned as though they were attempting to return to the camp. But again, all of them were put down to hypothermia, which might have been like the cause of death first, but one of them had a fractured skull.
Yeah.
So like, yes, they may have died of hypothermia before the fractured skull could do them enough harm to kill them. But like, why, how did they get a fractured skull?
Yeah. Did it say anything about like the level of damage or whether it looked like they'd been hit by a blunt instrument or?
One video that I watched said that it was like enough to cause like brain hemorrhaging.
Oh.
So, and also like a fractured skull is never like a casual,
no.
I didn't know I had a fractured skull for years.
Whoops, fell and fractured like, my skull, yeah. Although, I mean, yeah, I guess you can fall and fracture your skull, but it wouldn't be a whoops, fractured my skull moment.
Yeah, it wouldn't be like, oh, well, you know, I'll get it checked out eventually.
Yeah, exactly, kind of a thing. Like a broken toe.
Around 2 months later, in May, they found the final four bodies. They were in a ravine further into the woods.
Ooh.
One had a fractured skull. Again, so we've got two fractured skulls now, and two had crushed ribs, which are injuries more commonly associated with fatal car accidents and not possible to be caused by human force.
Oh my God, so huge impacts injuries basically.
I don't know how deep the ravine is, but like,
I was gonna
could
say
they have fallen into the ravine? No one has any, like, I've watched a lot of videos about it. I've not done as much research as, you know, there are people that have websites dedicated to this and have read all of their diaries.
Yeah.
Which, like, I haven't done, but I've not seen anyone say, might they have just fallen into the ravine?
Yeah, I imagine the injuries wouldn't be consistent with a fall into the ravine, because otherwise it would be like, oh, well, quite clearly they have fallen into the ravine and sustained these injuries.
Yeah.
And also then surely there would be a consistency between the ones who had the injuries and the ones who didn't, as in, in that they would all kind of have similar injuries if it were the ravine fall. Was it definitely pre-mortem or anti-mortem that those injuries were begotten?
Do you mean that they did they break their ribs before they died?
Yeah.
Well, this is a thought that I've had, because they have no outside traumas, like external traumas, like bruising that you have. But because I'm a morbid little human and I know some things about corpses, it's not a good, it's not a good thing to have on your CV. If they were already dying of hypothermia and then they broke their ribs in some way,
yeah,
they might not have had time to develop bruises
right
before they died. Because, you know, like, if you get punched in the face, it's the next day that you get the bruises. If the veins are broken and you're bleeding internally, then
that would still
bruises.
Happen. Yeah.
But depending on, like, because my thought is, like, if they were stumbling around in the dark because it was night, they're stumbling around in the dark, they fall in the ravine, they break their ribs and they die.
Yeah.
Like, if it's that fast and already dying of hypothermia, if it's that fast, is there time for bruises to develop? And is it a spooky thing that they don't have bruises? Or is it a natural thing, the blood just didn't have time to get there?
Because
they were basically dead.
Because I swear bruises can show up post-mortem that weren't there.
Yeah, before. So that often is like from gravity, so your blood pools,
right?
Because say you're lying on your back, your heart's not beating anymore, so it's all gonna go that way.
Oh, it's such a weird thought.
Yeah. So just an odd thing that could be spooky or could just be
Yeah,
their blood might have frozen before it got there.
Yeah, But also, like, you'd think if someone fell down a ravine and broke their ribs, there would be physical, like, gashes in them and stuff. Yeah. Like, if you fall on a rock and it caves your rib in, the rock's going to get some rib on it and you're going to be, like, bloodied by it, aren't you?
Very true. It's not just going to be.
So, I think it is quite
Unless
weird.
They were, like, flat rocks, which, like, yes, you still might bleed, but, like...
Just impact, not, like, impalement. Pointy. Yeah, yeah.
Another fact which has been made much of is that the woman among them was missing her tongue, which everyone is like, what a nightmare. Oh my God, what happened? I've heard different accounts, but apparently she was also missing her eyes and part of her lips, which is consistent with animals.
Yeah, I was going to say. Snacking. Like, it's weird that it's only her, but those body parts make sense as like, nice soft animal food.
Yes, they're soft and so animals like to eat them. And also she was lying face down in a stream, so it could even have been fish, or her decomposition was sped up because of the stream.
Yeah
So it could have been decomposition rather than animal.
And there were two women, right? And it was just this one woman who had those specific injuries.
Yes, I actually don't know which group the other woman is in. I don't think the other woman was missing her tongue. I don't think there was harvesting creep going around like, oh, a tongue from a woman. What a delight.
God. Yeah, I feel like that to me, again, like it's freaky in the circumstances, but to me, that's fairly like, well, animals will be animals.
They were wearing clothing that had been taken from the other one, from the other people.
Oh, so everyone says survived longer probably. And
yes, everyone says that they had taken the clothes off of the people after they'd died, which I'm sure is what happened, but also, you know,
good point.
If your friend's definitely gonna die and you're freezing, I'm just saying.
That's a point, actually. And also, like, I mean, I know the kind of impact wounds that the ones in the ravine had were apparently not consistent with any kind of force that a human could give. But in terms of just like the fractured skull of one of the guys in the woods, for instance, if it was a case of you're all walking, you're like, well, these three are very much on their last legs. We've decided for the greater good to take their clothes off them and leave them. And then, this guy has a little bit more fight in him than we expected. Crash! Okay, now I have his clothes.
Yeah, which, like, is probably not what happened. It probably was that they froze and they were, you know, had to stay warm. Yeah. I also know that some of them were wearing the clothes of the others, like they tied them around their feet.
Oh.
As shoes, because they had no shoes on. Then we get into another weird part, is like the other weird parts. I'm like, oh, well, you know, here's something that it could be explained. No, their clothing seemed to be covered in high levels of radiation. Levels of radiation that, in fact, exceed standards for people working with radioactive substances.
And they had nothing to do with radioactive substances, as far as we know, prior.
One of them was, I think, a nuclear engineer.
Okay.
Person at their uni.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's at the point that everyone's clothes is covered in radiation.
They're not going to contaminate. Yeah, that's mad.
Some people have claimed that the whole area had high levels of radiation.
Mm.
My question is, why were they testing for radiation in the first place?
Such a good point.
Like, here's some campers that we've found and they've all died in the woods. Let's check for radiation.
That's a really good point. I never thought of that. Like, I don't know if could it be a sort of standard test where, because I know just from TV dramas in hospitals, people will go, oh yeah, the bloods have come back. You know, there's no toxic substances found, no radiation, la la la. So I don't know if it's just a routine thing where lots of possibilities are checked.
Yeah, it could have been. And also, you know, it's the start of the 60s, so nuclear weapons are a thing.
True.
So it might have been that they were like, oh, you know, well, we've got a Geiger Müller counter, let's waft it and see. But I just don't know about that.
Yeah, that is weird.
And it also could have been like, oh, we have no idea what's happened to them. Maybe they have.
Anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. Although, again, like, you think you find bodies in the snow in whatever mysterious circumstances, but you're like, oh, their skin is black and falling off. They've clearly tried to like tie things around their feet or build a fire or whatever to keep themselves warm. It's February in this pass. Obviously they died of frostbite. The circumstances are weird. But you're not going to be like,
why would they leave their tent?
If actually they died of radiation poisoning.
Yeah, I suppose actually it is a leap.
It would be like if you found someone stabbed in an alley and you went, I just want to check that they've not drowned though. I do in the post-mortem, but not with the objective of finding out that they haven't drowned.
On to the theories. Theory number one, the night pea theory. Ooh. Pretty standard. People have thought this one for a while. Someone got up to have a wee in the night.
Yeah.
And they were swept away by strong wind, which is like a slightly bizarre theory.
It is, but at the same time, it's like weather conditions in these places are the kind of stuff that we can't really imagine from here.
Yeah. So I suppose it could have happened. Mm. They were swept away by strong wind. They called for help and the others came to help them and got swept away too, got lost and couldn't get back to the tent. But why is the tent cut? Because if you were like, Martha, I've gone for a wee and now I'm being swept away.
I wouldn't through to get to you.
No, because like, a zip. I don't know if they checked this because we'll get into it, but not everything's been released.
Right.
I don't know if they tested to see if the zip was stuck, because if the zip was like broken in some way that they couldn't get out, then it's not mysterious at all that they would cut the tent.
Also, I guess just for speed in terms of like, because if it's a tent that's supposed to withstand these way, way, way below freezing conditions, it might well be that there are several layers. In which case, if someone's like screaming because they're literally being blown away, you might be like, I just need to get out of this and grab them.
And yes, but I accept that. But at the same time, would you not then be like, ah, now we've cut our only way of shelter.
Now
we're all freezing to death in the tent because we've cut it open.
Know.
It's sort of as though they weren't planning on returning to the tent. Which rules out in my mind the night pea theory. The radiation. Where's that come from? Theory number two. Well, it's sort of two theories I've roped into one because I'm just not having it. Escaped prisoners or a robbery. The theory is that some escaped prisoners or robbers came along, frightened them out their tent, and then killed them all?
That's a load of bollocks, however way you put it.
But the injuries can't be caused by humans, at least the ribs and things like that. Nothing of value was taken.
No. Apparently this group of people that was big enough to overpower this seasoned hiking group as well is then completely fine and just disappears.
There are also no other tracks in the snow. So
that's just a bit stupid, really.
Yeah, and also escaped prisoners, as we all learned from the Northern Lights, if you're in a cold place and you're a prisoner trying to escape, you need warm clothes or you'll freeze to death.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, your first point of call would not be to chase someone out of their tent. You'd be like, oh, God.
Unless they were trying to steal their gear and clothing, but then first of all, there aren't tracks, so they weren't there. Mm. But also, why didn't they then steal the clothing off of, I suppose, the ravine people? But there aren't tracks, they weren't there, it didn't happen.
Yeah, no. And also, if you're like, even if we imagine that somehow some escaped prisoners and robbers decided it was a good idea to go out in the middle of a minus 30 degree like snowstorm night for shits and gigs, how many were there initially? Like 8-10 people?
There are
nine hikers with all this gear, clearly equipment that
one of which fought a bear with a hammer.
Yeah, they have like hammers, they have things to slash tents open, they are warm comparatively inside their tent, and then like however many raggedy almost dead people turn up like, please can we have your stuff, it'd just be like they could very easily take them, so they wouldn't run.
Yeah, no, I don't believe that one.
No,
and
I
also
think that's quite silly.
It's Dead Mountain, which is where it took place, is very rarely ever traversed by the like local tribes people that live there or anyone else, because
there are no prisons on Dead Mountain, then why on earth would any prisoners from anywhere else go, where should we go? Oh, I like the sound of that Dead Mountain place. Let's
I just don't think it happened.
Yeah.
Another theory is animal attack.
Yeah.
So a big spooky animal, well, not spooky, just a big animal, frightened them out of their tent and chased them away. Mm. But first of all, it's unlikely that animals were in the area because, again, Dead Mountain, not a lot habits there. And there aren't any tracks for any animals.
And also, I don't know, if it's an animal that's big enough that 9 people who've stood up to scary animals before would all have immediately run, then surely it would have been powerful enough to get some of them. So you'd find, you know, half-eaten remains and things like that, rather than, you know, because if it's that much slower than them, why would they run?
Well, that's very true. And also, again, you know, Yuri fought a bear with a hammer.
Yeah.
So,
and he clearly got away pretty well the first time.
Yeah. Like, Yuri's not taking anything from any animals. Mm. So I just don't think it happened. And there were no tracks.
I don't know. I'm not a wilderness survivor or a hiker or anything, but I would imagine the advice is pretty much always stay in the tent if there's an animal around. Like, I can see how you would be really, really freaked out and want to not be trapped in there, but surely logically you're more vulnerable out in the open either way.
I think it depends, because obviously if you can see the animal, you know how to defeat it, whereas if it's prowling around outside your tent, you're just in there. Like, obviously it's not great to leave the tent and fight it. I don't think I would. But it's not like they left the tent to fight it. They left the tent and ran for a mile or further without any shoes. Yeah,
which you think you'd, like, you might be like, okay, guys, let's stand ready with this knife in case. And then if something starts to bite through the tent, then we'll slash the other side and get out. But yeah, you think that would be an absolute last. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it wouldn't be exactly. A preemptive
measure.
One thing that I'll just mention off the back of animal attack is there's a theory a yeti attacked them.
Yeah,
I'm not going to go into it. Just no.
Yeah.
So another theory: avalanche.
Oh.
They heard the boom of an avalanche beginning. They cut the tent and they ran, which is acceptable. They probably would have known what to do in an avalanche because they're hikers in the Russian wilderness.
Yeah.
Fair enough. However. I'm just like, here's a plausible theory, and here's why it's wrong.
Yeah.
There's never been an avalanche reported there. There's no evidence an avalanche happened at the camp. The snow on the tent is natural settling.
Yeah, like if the tent stayed there.
Yeah, exactly.
Then,
like, they might have thought there was going to be an avalanche and then been like, oh no, we're now in the woods and we don't know how to get back to our camp, which is plausible. But why would they have thought there's an avalanche?
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you.
Oh, okay.
Whoa.
I was going to say, that's the one that makes the most sense to me so far.
Yes. Like, even if maybe there wasn't an actual avalanche, maybe they thought there was, completely panicked and just ran.
Yeah. And also it could explain, if there actually was one, some of the high impact injuries. But then if it was that high impact, surely there would be evidence of it elsewhere. So, and the tent would not have survived. Otherwise, they would have stayed in the tent.
Yes. Well, also, the tent and the whole camp was apparently reported to have been put up quite amateurishly.
Oh, interesting. But these were all, like, very experienced people.
Yeah. So I don't know whether it was because they were kind of setting up post walking through a snowstorm. So they were just doing it sloppily and like, it'll be fine for tonight.
Yeah.
But apparently it wasn't put up to a very high standard, so again, if there was an avalanche, like,
definitely wouldn't have
good
stayed.
Luck the tent.
Mm.
But yeah, so speaking of hearing something you think might have been an avalanche, let's go on to the various government conspiracy theories. There were bright orange orbs seen in the sky the night the hikers died, and then throughout February and March.
Interesting.
So some people have said that these might have been missiles that the Russian government was testing, because it's quite a deserted area. People think that the sound of the bombs might have frightened the hikers into thinking that there was an avalanche. So what they heard was a bomb exploding and they assumed it was an avalanche and ran. There's also a theory that they might have been testing radioactive weapons, hence the radiation. Some people have said, like, oh, maybe a bomb exploded near them and that's how they got the injuries. But like, surely there's evidence of a bomb.
Yeah,
there's a theory that the hikers may have traveled through a classified location where radioactive testing was happening, which is how they have the radiation, and then were hunted down by the military because of what they'd seen. I mean, I think this theory might have been made up by someone who's not a massive fan of the Russians in the 1950s.
Yeah, it would be a weird, like, also, if you're gonna do, I don't know, if you're gonna do an extermination, there are a lot of weird loose ends that they have left, if that is what's happened, you know.
Exactly.
Like, you could do it more cleanly.
Yeah, like, I don't know whether they, because my first thought was like, we'll just kill them and take the bodies, they just disappeared. But then, you know, people will be like, oh, we'll keep looking and we'll keep looking, whereas if you find the corpse, that's like, that, oh, well, they're there.
Yeah, but I don't, and it just doesn't make sense with things like the slashing of their tent and the impact injuries and fractured lardy-dars.
Fractured lardy-dars,
like, I would
don't
think,
fracture your lardy-dars,
because I would think a really logical thing to do, to if they were going, if we kill them and take the bodies, people will know there's been foul play, whereas if we just leave them exposed, then people will think tragic accident. So you scare them out of their tent, possibly by literally being like, get out of your tent, I have a gun, or by, you know, simulating weird noises or whatever, and then you chase them and then you just leave them.
Yeah, true,
because they will die.
Yeah. The other thing, I love the idea of like these Russian military soldiers being like, ooh, ghosties.
It's me, Bigfoot, come to take my prey.
Yeah, exactly. Like, in the government conspiracy theory, there's also a theory of a cover up. So there were many military officials hurrying the investigation along. The area was closed off for 3 years after the incident. The 10th hiker, Yuri Yudin, helped identify items that were found in the camp, but he didn't recognize a cloth, which is described as military style. I don't know.
Green?
But also, the thing is I don't know, like, first of all, what kind of cloth, how big? Is it like a flannel? And also, high-level camping equipment is probably on par with, especially
like military
at the time,
grade.
Yeah, like, you know how people are like, these are military grade hiking boots.
Exactly.
This is what people wear. Like,
because they need to be able to withstand stupid conditions.
Yeah, and especially like in the 50s, when everything was kind of like stepping up a bit, they were probably the same. So I don't know.
I would think so too.
Also, skis and glasses, you know, he didn't recognize them. The documents were kept classified until the 70s. There are parts that still haven't been released. You know, for example, I'm saying about the zip, like, of the tent. We don't know if that just wasn't looked at or whether they're just not telling us about
what was found or not. Yeah.
What was found. And they never released the film that the hikers took themselves, because one of the women was a photographer and would always take pictures of all of her journeys and all of her hikes.
You'd really think that would... Well, I guess it has been looked at, just not released.
Yeah, it's just not been... It was, like, classified even from people that were part of the investigation. And, like, kind of lower down officials who have retired have come out and said, like, they wouldn't let us access various things. They wouldn't look into various leads. We were told, like, we say this and that's it. It's a theory. I don't want to be murdered, so I'm not going to say it's the truth. But those are the theories about the government. On to the two that I believe.
Oh, okay.
So there's two that I'm like, it's either this or this, and that's it.
All right.
And there are parts that still aren't completely explained in one of them, but we'll get into that. First theory, aliens.
Okay.
Bright flying spheres in the sky.
Uh-huh.
Government cover-up, radiation, lack of tracks, inhuman trauma from within.
To be fair, it's such a bizarre case that that does tick more boxes than other theories do.
Yeah, so obviously the aliens, woo, like come down in their ships, which is where there's flying orbs. Maybe the lights just frighten them and they run. Maybe they're like, hey, we're aliens. Like, thank you so much for coming to the meeting point. And then they like run and they're like, oh, okay, is this customary? And then they like chase them and there's radiation from their spaceship. Maybe they took them up and broke their ribs as they dropped them. We don't know. But I think it's
That's so annoying, because that actually, like, I do not believe that if aliens that intelligent exist, that would have been all that we have, you know, encountered of them. But if we ignore how sort of ridiculous it is on the surface of it, it answers more of the questions than...
It answers all of the questions. Why did they run? Because there were aliens. Maybe aliens leave different tracks than humans.
Or maybe
they're trained to look
overhead
for.
The whole time, just with.
Maybe they just
trains.
Fly. Yeah. In general. Yeah. And then, you know, the people ran, or maybe they pulled them up into their spaceship, did some experiments, and then, which I'll get into why that might have happened later. Mm-hmm. And then, like, put them down, and that's why there's radiation, and then they were like left in the snow for ages. We don't, you know, it could have happened.
Yeah, no, I can see that.
On to slightly more plausible theory, okay, which is the one that I am inclined towards.
Okay.
So basically there's this thing called infrasound, which is sound which is below human hearing level, and it causes anxiety, fear, and psychological disturbance. It's also used, fun fact, in allegedly used, I don't know, but I've heard it's used in the soundtracks of horror films.
Oh god,
in some, to like put you on edge immediately.
Yeah,
which is like fun but also quite disturbing, because I don't want that to be going.
Yeah, I'd prefer not to be mind controlled.
Like, I'd really love never to experience the effects of infrasound, if that's okay with everyone.
Yeah.
The theory is that the wind on Dead Mountain can reach this level, and that all of the hikers are sat in the tent at night. They're tired. They've been hiking all day. They've walked through a snowstorm that day. Mm. And out of nowhere, they all begin to feel inexplicable fear,
panic,
anxiety, panic, and they're freaking out. They can't know why, but they're completely freaked, which is like, it is a spooky environment. Like, I suppose you're there with your friends and like you're having a good time, but also there could be anything out there.
Yeah, that's the thing, I think, because it's easier to go, oh well, why on earth would you cut open the tent in literally any circumstance? You're obviously going to die. But then, even, you know, in things like, if you and I and another friend have been in a tent in a very safe campsite in the UK and we're telling ghost stories, it's really easy to freak yourself out and be like, I don't know what to do, and want to like run and things, which are obviously stupid.
I can imagine, you know, like maybe even the zip got frozen shut is a thought. But if you're feeling this way and you need to get out, it's too hot in the tent.
That's true. Like, if you're getting claustrophobic and stuff, you're just like, I don't think
yeah,
passed out.
And the zip isn't working and everyone's feeling the same way, it might make sense that you cut the tent open.
Yeah.
Because it can have quite severe effects on people. Mm. So the theory is that they then completely panicked and ran from the tent. And then when they're further down the mountain, they can't hear. Well, they can't hear it anyway, but they don't feel the effects of the infrasound.
Like, what the hell are we thinking? Let's go back.
And then they can't find their way back because it's night.
Yeah.
And then they freeze. So that's the one that I go for. It doesn't explain the radiation, but the only one that seems to is either the government or aliens.
Yeah.
I
don't want to say I like, because obviously tragic event, but I also kind of am inclined towards the infrasound theory, but it's the radiation and the internal injuries. Although I guess internal injuries, I don't know how unheard of it is for there to be fractures and such in people who have died by other means, and it's not particularly showing on the outside. Like, I'm sure that does happen.
I'm satisfied with my explanation. There are probably people who out there who know a lot more about corpses in the cold than I do, who are like, no, that wouldn't be the case. But the only one that I'm less sold on is the person halfway up the hill with the skull fracture. I can't understand how you would get that. I suppose you could fall on a rock and fracture your skull quite easily, sharp little rock. Don't know.
But it doesn't
explain everything, but it does explain the initial running away.
It's definitely the best explanation for why the hell they would abandon their tent in the way they did.
Especially because there aren't tracks of anything else that could have frightened
them. Without an actual external influencing factor. And I guess the radiation, they wouldn't necessarily know when it's from. Like, it's possible, you know, in the government thing where they're like, or maybe they walked through a testing site without knowing it earlier. That could still have happened. But we walked through a testing site, didn't it? And then
they didn't know, but then they weren't hunted by the government. They just died in their tent. Yeah, well, I think, do you remember that one time we were on D of E and we accidentally walked through, wasn't it like through, it was like a gun range or something.
It was specifically, it was like missile testing.
Yeah, we walked through a missile testing range and we were like, oh my God, I need to leave.
Jesus Christ. Yeah, I really don't know. That's actually happened to me like a couple of times.
It's terrifying.
Yeah, once or twice when I've been on holiday, I think in Spain, there's like this huge caged community being like, don't go in here because we're testing missiles.
But then, which is like, good on Spain. They've caged it off. In England, you could walk and see a sign and be like, oh, by the way, be careful because we're testing missiles. Not like, just
in the same way, you might go, don't cross this field because farmers might think you're a dog and shoot you. It's like, it's not, these two things are not the same.
I don't think people with eyesight that's so bad they think a human's a dog should be allowed a gun. And that's,
yeah, agreed.
You know. So the official inquest concluded that, quote, an unknown compelling force was the hikers' ultimate cause of death and also the cause of their behavior. So we don't know why they did it.
Yeah.
And they'd all died of hypothermia, is
Blimey.
What they said. That's all of the information I found on the Dyatlov Pass incident, which they've renamed that area of Dead Mountain, the Dyatlov Pass now.
God.
Which is like, hi, Mum, I'm going on a hike and I'm going to go through the Dyatlov Pass.
Dyatlov, no? What an interesting name. What's that from? Oh, the guy who led the expedition where people horrifically died, you know?
It's on Dead Mountain. Thank you for listening to the Other Marthas podcast, the show where a drama student and a film graduate try to make sense of things we wish we were qualified in instead. If you enjoyed listening to today's episode, please do subscribe to our channel for more.